For August the 6th of 2021, we talk about The Ascent, Splitgate, Strangeland, and more. Welcome to Level 380. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismath.
And you are listening to The Level, a podcast for people who love video games. Ben got out of work late. He will be Kool-Aid manning his way into this conversation at some point, I imagine, during the catch-up portion at the beginning of the episode.
That's code for the computer program that Ben actually is on the fritz. And while we're getting that patched, we need a reason to stall until we can get him back online.
Yes. The mainframe is currently rebooting. Welcome back, David.
Hey, good to be back.
Yeah. What's going on? What you up to?
Not too much. Starting a new job next week, and then going to the LARP thing this week. So
cool.
End of this week. So, and then getting ready for Dragon Con. So it's like all the things all the time.
So how frequently do you guys do the LARP thing? Is that an every week or once a month or?
Once a month.
Because I feel like you talk about it every time. So I'm sure there's plenty of. Intravenous is the wrong word. I was going to say intravenous stuff, intermittent stuff, in between stuff is what I'm going for.
Yeah, I mean, I think what it ends up being, it's once a month, which means one week I say like, "Hey, I'm going there." The next week I say, "Hey, I went there," and so that's like half the time.
Right.
And then if I spend like, you know, some time some other week, working on a costume or something,
hey, prep like, for there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And it's been a little while since he's been on. It sounded like I was saying that to make you feel bad, and I feel bad for implying that.
No, that's all right. I mean, guilt and shame are the currency of the world.
I find that it's the best way to make people improve themselves is to make them feel as bad as possible.
Yeah, that definitely tracks.
It's parenting 101 right there.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Neat. Well, how about you, Dennis? What's going on?
Nothing too crazy. I was talking earlier. We've got a brewery that is walking distance from my house. And we did a night tonight where like basically set it up as like a fundraiser. Mm-hmm. And the entire neighborhood came out and got dinner there. Mm. Which is delicious. But me being just the ultimate dexterous person, accidentally knocked my beer onto an entire pizza, thereby wasting the entire beer and the entire pizza.
Oh no!
So not
you mean
not
making
highlight.
The best pizza?
Pizza.
So, like, you know, I replaced it and, you know, it was fine. But we get towards the end of our time there and Luke is like, "I'm still hungry." And I was like, "Look, dude, if, you know, I moved the pizza the second I spilled beer on it, but it was on the table. I was like, "Look, dude, if you are really desperate, you can have the beer pizza. I just wouldn't recommend it." He's like, "Oh, I can't. It's alcoholic."
Oh. Oh, I'm torn between saying, "Oh, what a good boy," and, "Oh, what a square."
I mean, are those different?
If I can get that attitude to last for another, I don't know, 10 years, then might be all right. But I have a feeling it's going to fade at some point.
Yeah. There, was his birthday here recently? I forget which one was born.
Oh, yeah. This was Luke's birthday last week. So we did a small thing with the grandparents. He got an RC car.
Cool.
And we've been playing with that nonstop. But it is not really registered to them that you don't need to run after it while you race it. Oh. But you can spend in one place. So right now they just run behind it. Which, I get it, like kind of moving a character with where the camera is on the screen. Like if you're always behind it, you always know which way left and right is.
Yes.
So it's easier from that front. And I'm certainly not complaining about them doing wind sprints up and down the street while playing with it.
Right.
So it all works out.
Yeah. Yeah, they'll figure it out. Man, RC cars are fun.
Oh yeah, so much fun. My older brother, this is when I was so young as to not really remember, but he was into like actual racing them.
Mm-hmm.
And there were like places in town that you would go that was like a track that was like an actual like track.
Oh wow!
And you'd stand in the booth and be able to kind of see the layout of it and drive the cars around it. So it gets intense if you want to get into it.
I just remember there was that fad for RC car video games in like, what is that, the 90s or the aughts?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Micro Machines game, I remember.
I was literally just tweeting about this because I was just thinking about it.
What?
I look it up on Twitter. I said, hey, you know what was fun? Those Micro Machines games where you raced around courses that were like pool tables and like toy room floors and stuff like that.
Yeah, they were.
Yeah, so that's why I never understood, like, why do they make
any other kind of racing game?
That are... Huh?
Continue. Sorry.
Oh, why make games that are just constrained by, you know, the real world when you can just make crazy games?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Realism is overrated, especially as reality just gets kind of worse.
Yeah, yeah. Fun will always beat realism. Sometimes realism is fun.
Mm-hmm.
To me. To
sometime. Me. Just, you know, in times before, you know, this decade.
Right. You know, that almost was my end boss tonight, and since I'm not talking about it then, I'll talk about it now. I've been reading the occasional news updates from like the various GTA 5 roleplay servers. And there was an interview with a guy who like runs the cab company. He's like, you know, sure, it's stressful and kind of boring sometimes. There's a lot to manage, but it's an earnest living. And like, what the hell, dude?
Yeah, I saw a headline about that, and I was pretty unclear. Is he making actual money off of that, or is it?
No, he's just role playing it.
Gotcha.
It's like they went and interviewed the owner of like a real life cab company. Only that owner has the option to go do way cooler shit at any moment.
Right. Yeah.
Also, the real life cab company very rarely has to. Worry about getting chased by flying DeLorean shooting rockets.
Well, there is that.
Yeah.
Anyway, not to end boss us right there.
But... hey, Ben.
How's it going?
Ben, we just finished the end boss, so you are good for tonight.
All yeah, right. We're going with the Dark Souls model of just start with the boss.
Buttons.
All right. You know, it's like having your dessert.
Okay, I was doing your... it, but he said it now, and we have to leave.
God. Okay, we need to start up. Okay, 381, re-rack it.
Yeah.
That's the podcast safe word.
Oh, man. It's like when you say skull and bones, and a bush needs to leave the room. Yeah. How's it going, Ben?
Pretty good. Are we in like what we've been doing segment?
Yeah. We're still in the warm up.
Oh, okay. Are we recording or not recording?
We're recording. So this is
shit.
Okay. So
don't
so,
talk about your drug ring.
And also, like, I don't want people to know that like the start of the show is not the start of us talking. So like there is the all of us hopping on and asking how are we really doing, and that's where we share like stories that might not be like, you know, suitable for a general audience. And then we start, and then it becomes like, oh yeah, like what's cool, what's going on? We are
we're trying to go for that Tarantino medio res thing.
Yeah, yeah. So we are
versus what's interesting in your life.
Yeah. We are post the opening song, but pre the grind. So
gotcha.
Calibrate your stories accordingly.
All right, I got it ready in the hopper. I went to Portland over the weekend for my buddy's birthday. Played 3 board games. I had played them before, but they're all fun. Wingspan, Suburbia, and the new Terraforming Mars.
Mm,
good times. Ooh. Yeah.
Nice.
And
Wait, and, so we've terraformed Mars before?
In board game form, yes. And Venus, and a few other places. And then outside of that, I saw the movie The Green Knight over the weekend, and that movie is pretty sweet. I want to see it again, because I don't know what to think of it.
Tale as a child, because the Green Knight came out, and everyone's like, oh, rehashing that old tale. And I'm like, I have literally never heard of The Green Knight before.
That was the one Arthurian legend we actually read in high school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had never read it before, so this was a new...
It prominently revolves around a head chopping off contest.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yeah. But you liked it. You liked The Green Knight.
Yeah, it was really good. Yeah.
I have not heard anybody say otherwise. I was tempted. Yeah. I was tempted to go on Sunday. I ended up having a lot of work to do, I'm still anxious about COVID. Mm-hmm. So like if I had any theater within reasonable driving distance that was also not in a county that had like sizable spread, but I'm like, I am in a big sea of orange on the CDC map. So it was like, it'll probably be streaming soon. So
yeah, that's fair. I don't want to encourage anyone to see the movie in an unsafe manner. I'll put it that way.
Yeah.
On a somewhat less artistically sound note, Snake Eyes is actually a really good movie.
Ooh. No, that's a G.I. Joe
story.
Yeah, ninja origin story.
Huh.
Oh, go ahead.
Who owns the G.I. Joe franchise, film franchise?
Warner, maybe?
I was going to guess like a Mattel kind of deal. Like,
yeah.
Who did the
I don't know.
Movie?
I know the comics were Marvel.
Huh. Yeah.
Oh, Hasbro. Duh.
Yeah, okay, there you go. I am completely ignorant of the Jonahverse.
So
I just somehow completely missed it as a kid.
Yeah, I've got a lot of friends who are really into it. Apparently the comics are a lot better. But it's kind of interesting actually, because it was I want to say like actually written by a veteran.
The comics were.
Yeah. So it's and I don't know, but it's also noteworthy for being I guess diverse.
Okay. Is this like a recent run of G.I. Joe comics?
This is like back in the day. So that's one of the big things with this is Snake Eyes' original history was very, very much set in Vietnam.
Okay.
And so they kind of had to figure out a different way to do it. So that's, you know, been the argument among fans is whether it's okay that they change it or whatever.
Time works.
I have mixed feelings. Like, so the other movie I actually saw that's also very good was Black Widow.
Okay.
I still think they should have just set it during the Cold War.
How would that have lined up at all?
Have her be I don't know.
They did have time travel in Endgame, so they could probably make it happen.
I mean, Scarlett Johansson is 36, so that's not that far-fetched.
Yeah.
In fact, that would almost perfectly line up.
Yeah. Well, wait, for like Into the Spider-Verse and Homecoming, like that side of things, they've pretty much gone full willing to be like, okay, for this one, this is what the universe is going to be. So like I'm ready for us to feel like we've got to justify doing the things that would be cool in a superhero movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean,
I'm pro Scarlett Johansson suing Disney because I'm pro anyone suing Disney. So.
Yeah. Yeah. That I agreed. I think we can all agree on that. Oh gosh,
I would agree, but I'm afraid Disney is going to buy my company. Oh, you never know. Not because there's any reason they buy specifically my company. I'm just afraid they're going to buy every company.
Yeah, mm-hmm. No, it could happen. And you, guys, sorry. Just got something across the wire here. Duckfeed has been bought by...
Donald Duckfeed.
We have a new host now.
Daffy, no, it's not Daffy Feed. Oh my God, sacrilege! No. Donald Feed, please.
Yeah, Donald Duckfeed.
Oh man, no. You did. I still won't play Kingdom Hearts. Yeah, I don't have. Go ahead.
The thing I'm excited for is what we've got 3 years until Mickey Mouse becomes public domain.
Oh no, they'll change the laws. Yeah, no, it'll just like it's happened every time.
I know. It's like a lot of the kind of scuttlebutt stuff I've been able to read, it sounds like maybe they won't this time around.
I don't know.
Like Disney says they are not going to, which doesn't mean much. Doesn't appear to be moving in that direction, and I think there's gonna be much less appetite. Like the political climate seems much less pro Disney.
I don't know. They've already fucking ruined the world of intellectual property. So I like, you know, too little too late on one hand, and B, if it allows them a further monopoly on anything, they're going to do it.
More twig on the inferno of IP that Disney has created?
Yes.
I still maintain my pet theory is that that's one of the reasons that fandom culture is so toxic, is because, you know, traditionally, if you didn't like the way King Arthur ended, you could just make your own.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yeah. I don't have anything going on over here. Literally, it's just been work. And unless people want to hear about me going to Red Lobster and eating shrimp, I don't know that.
Yes.
I mean, was it the Shrimp Fest or whatever?
So
you go to Red Lobster and eat shrimp for work?
No, not for work. No, it's a tradition with me and my brother. Every year we go and do it. We've long since stopped like making it into stunt eating, you know, like that ended in high school. Honestly, now it's just you go and they bring out like a bunch of different kind. So, you know, like here's garlic skewers and, you know, stuff like that.
And seafood is the worst thing to stunt eat.
Yeah.
On the other hand, Cheddar Bay biscuits are the best thing to stunt eat.
And the even best those. Of binge, the worst of binge.
And even those, I had one and a half of those because they came a little bit close. Everything was kind of, you know. One and a half biscuits. I'm not a monster.
No, also, I think what you mean is you're not living.
Yeah.
Also, I love this, Google, like, people ask, is Cheddar Bay a real place?
I need to go there. This is their biscuits. Imagine how good everything else tastes. Yeah. Turns out the butter...
I mean, to be fair, there is a Cheddar England or something,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. Who knew that butter and salt tasted good? Yeah. Here's my warning. Okay. Like every place has a new menu. Sometimes that's good. Sometimes that's bad. I saw that they had Brussels sprouts as the side and I was like, oh, that sounds good. Huh. And I asked like, hey, how are the Brussels sprouts? Cause you know, restaurant Brussels sprouts tend to be good, but, like Red Lobster, I kind of want to, vet things first. And they said, oh my God, they're amazing. And they came out and they looked good. They were cooked well and all that, but they were drizzled in some kind of honey sauce that they didn't tell me about. And I didn't want the sweet sauce. So I kind of only ended up eating the ones that were lightly sauced. So, a warning, if you are like me, sorry, and dropping pieces of metal while you're recording your audio podcast. No, if you are like me and you're a recent convert to everything Brussels sprouts, but you're particular about sauces, they're going to assume that you want a whole bunch of honey sauce drizzled over them.
Yeah, that's disgusting. The only proper way to eat Brussels sprouts is with butter.
Yeah. I'll do butter or you know, like even just as simple as just cook them in olive oil and salt and pepper and salt and pepper to taste. That's all you need.
If you have to eat them lightly sauced, I recommend getting lightly sauced first.
Yeah. Like maybe a little bit of vinaigrette on it, but again, nothing. I don't want it sweet. I want that bitter. I want that bitter, baby.
Mm-hmm. Okay, because this is the type of person I am and the type of podcast this is, I just looked it up on Google Maps. Cheddar is not coastal. Okay. However, there is a cheddar reservoir.
Okay.
My whole life is a lie.
I think we need to talk about games. We've been doing too much preamble here. How about a regular kind of show? I think that sounds good to me. Ben is sharing Brussels sprouts recipes in the and the Discord. The regular kind of show, the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And why don't we get started with
the grind,
where we talk about the games we've been playing over the past period of time or so. David, throw into you first.
Yeah, let's see. What the hell have I been grinding on? So I've mainly been doing some Game Pass hits. Okay. They added Atomic Clocks. That would be a very boring addition.
Yeah.
Atomic Crops. Have any of you guys checked this out?
This has passed, this has popped up on like Steam curation kind of things for me. It looks interesting, but I have not taken the plunge on it.
So it's basically a roguelike bullet hell Harvest Moon.
What?
So at the start of the game, you inherit a farm from your uncle, and while you're touring it, you stumble upon a portal or a manhole or whatever to like an underground bunker. And while you're exploring that, it's lucky that you do, because there's a sudden nuclear war.
Okay.
And when you climb back up, the world's all like mutated and post-apocalyptic. And so you apparently have the last farm in town. Farm in the world, rather. And so you have to basically every day run around the countryside fighting mutants in order to collect seeds, run back and plant them in your farm, and then defend them from hordes of invaders during the night. And then at the end of the night, hopefully harvest your stuff and, get picked up by a helicopter to go back to town and buy stuff.
Okay.
And while you're in town, you can do the, general... Harvest Moons type things where, you romance the anthropomorphic bunny rabbit and the, mutant beetle guy and things like that.
The tagline, at least here on Steam, is Farm, Marry, Kill, which is very good.
Yes. it's very strange. Has kind of a interesting aesthetic. All of the plants are these like mutant versions of regular plants. So say like a potato that has literal eyes.
That's pretty good.
Things like that. And then you can get mutant animals to help on your farm. So for example, the cows, instead of giving milk, they just can projectile shoot water to water your crops for you.
So you get cows instead of sprinklers. Oh, come on.
Exactly. Similarly, all of your tractors have been converted Mad Max style to various weapons and things like that.
Of course.
So it's just, it's a very strange, very silly game.
For the mutant crops, is one of them tamako?
I don't know, but that would be amazing.
Yeah.
And do you know what's in it?
I don't know. That would be funny as a good late era Simpsons joke. And by late era, I mean fully within the first third of the run of the show.
the late of the good era.
Yeah.
Side note, Cole, I was talking about you over the weekend where you can lay any Simpsons reference down and you will pick it up. Yep. And yeah. So I appreciate you being there for whenever that happens.
Yep. No worries, man. It's a language. I really am afraid of the day that stops being a currency. I worry that people are going to run out of patience for that. So
or memory.
Yeah. Oh man. But
I think more has just gotten to the point that you can say literally anything and follow it with, oh, that's a Simpsons reference, and people have to believe you.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's a South Park reference.
Yeah.
Oh man. Can continue, David. How's the combat? Is this like a twin stick thing?
Yeah, yeah, very, very much a twin stick type of thing. A lot of very over the top kind of elemental weapons. So, you know, you've got your chain gun, your shotgun, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of leans more bullet hell than anything else.
Cool.
So, you know, it, like I said, fully top down, that sort of thing. I think my favorite is all of the bunnies in the world have apparently been converted into Rambo-style, like, militants.
Okay.
So they'll run around your farm with machine guns shooting at you, which makes no sense whatsoever, but...
This has got big, like, I mean, just hearing about it, Plants vs. Zombies energy.
Yeah, yeah, kind of has that sort of thing. One of the best ways to get crops out in the wilderness is to hunt down hordes of flying beefalo, which are honeybee buffalo.
Yeah. This sounds,
That is a tough way to mate.
Oh, no.
Huh. Now this sounds this sounds fun.
It's not a deep game, but well, I don't know, not deep. That might not be fair. It's, you know, it's a roguelike. You know, it's one of those, you know, play for many short bursts type of thing.
So like when you go out into the wilderness, is that like the randomly generated like dungeon kind of part of it?
So it's randomly generated on a run, but it's fairly open.
Okay.
It's a lot more of a... So it's like in each of the cardinal directions, there's a different biome.
Okay.
So it's like jungle, plains, desert, and tundra, because apparently nuclear weapons also made the, you know, atmosphere just not work like physics.
Right, right. Like a video game.
And, you know, they're basically... I don't know. I would compare it a lot more to kind of the Diablo 2 era of procedural design, where it's kind of just big fields with clumps of different types of enemies that try to end your life.
Yeah. So this isn't like Isaac or Gungeon.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
Where it's kind of blocks. This is. Okay, I gotcha. And I assume like the different biomes have different enemies and that yield different seeds. So that's how you would like choose which way to go. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I always wondered where seeds came from.
Oh yeah. Yeah. By killing mutants.
Yeah. How does it treat death? I mean, cause you know, when I set up a Stardew Valley field, I like to assume that it's not going to reset, at least, you know, outside of a season change. Yeah.
So it does reset, and it's a little bit different in that your crops pretty much all will grow to maturity in a single night.
Okay.
And also you start with like a 3x3 plot of land.
Mm-hmm.
And then you know, getting the ability to add one more square is like a medium rare drop from enemies.
Gotcha.
So
okay.
It's much less oriented around the like Stardew Valley, like, let's set up a, you know, factory farm with tons and tons of things. In some ways, the farming is kind of just window dressing on, like, a point defense type of thing.
Yeah. And it probably plays into the economy. You want to set it up in a way that is defensible, with a hardy variety of crops that you can sell to feed back in for your next run. That makes sense. Yeah.
Right. And there are some things. So, like, if you plant four of the same crop in a square, they will mutate into it like a mega crop. So, like, a huge version of that crop that's worth more. Yeah. Similarly, that turrets, I guess going back to the Plants vs. Zombie things, turrets are in fact crops. Okay. So, I don't know. It's mostly just, you know, a silly excuse to run around and like shoot things.
Turnips?
Checks out. Yeah. The one downside I'd say is it seems like I've done several runs before I got to the point where I could make any progress whatsoever in terms of like the, you know, between run progress. So it seems to me like maybe that's I don't know, at least for me in a roguelite, I want to, you know, every run accomplish at least something.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem like it's quite tuned for that, which, I mean, I suppose if you're into more the, like, Isaac style or, you know, FTL style of roguelikes, that probably won't bother you at all.
Yeah, but if you're expecting, like, a Rogue Legacy, you're into, then it's, you know,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. What persists between death?
Well, Like I said, I've not unlocked anything, but from what I've read on the wiki, apparently you can recruit mutant ants that will make build your Harvest Moon style house for you, and each thing you build changes things.
Okay.
But that's all I know, because I'm not good enough at the game to actually unlock stuff.
Yet.
Nice. What else have you been playing?
Sure. So the other thing, also a Game Pass freebie, was The Ascent.
Oh yeah, that's really recent, actually.
Yeah. That was just early this week, late last week, something like that. And it's basically a cyberpunk shooter oriented Diablo. So kind of the the three quarters view. You know, you're running around. And, you know, waves upon waves of enemies and, you know, just click on them to kill. Although in this case, it's more, you know, click to shoot and, you know, you've got basic dodge, those sorts of things. So a little more, I don't know, maybe some Enter the Gungeon type of gameplay.
Yeah. I imagine if you were playing this on a controller, it would play twin stick.
Yeah, exactly. The thing that, at least for me, is the most interesting, the gameplay's good. I wouldn't say, you know, the best in the world, but, you know, it's definitely works. To me, the most interesting thing is the cyberpunk setting's fairly interesting. Basically, the plot line is that there's this, you know, planet that's, you know, just covered in a series of arcologies, and you know, they get people to you know, come out to this planet with promises of a better life, and then you know, people then, you know, end up indebted for the trip out to the planet and just have to work as like slaves until they can pay off their debt.
Yeah, doing a total recall
online.
Yeah.
Yes. Exactly.
Wow, that sounds so far from reality, this science fiction game.
Oh yeah, totally. And so you are basically work in the bottom of one of these arcologies when suddenly the general purpose AI that kind of controls the company suddenly declares bankruptcy. And just is like, yep, we, you know, sell all the things. And so now no one technically owns the Arcology. So, you know, it kind of takes place at the point where you figure out, like, oh, all the other corporations are probably going to, you know, be sweeping in to, you know, take whatever they can get.
Yeah.
And then also the corporate security is realizing, wait, why are we, you know, protecting people from the mutants when we aren't actually getting paid?
Yeah, they filed Chapter 86 bankruptcy.
Right. Yeah. And so you're basically running around trying to unite the various habitats to survive.
Okay.
And it's, so it's much more the kind of crappy, gritty, like, you know, wading through sewage form of cyberpunk, more the kind of Warhammer 40K hive world,
okay,
as opposed to like the neon and chrome approach to cyberpunk.
Yeah, no.
The other thing that's kind of neat is there's a whole bunch of alien species. So there's at least three that have been able to identify. There's kind of some bug sort of people, little, you know, style goblins, and then these like massive kind of what are the guys from Mass Effect? Korgans, Korgis, something like that.
Krogans.
Yeah, Korgis. The Krogan.
Krogans. Yeah. Yeah, if there's a spectrum, a Korgi is on one side and a Krogan is on the other.
Yeah, so they're kind of like Krogans, except that they have, like, I guess, kind of bunny ears, sort of.
I feel like I need to say that again, and you could name both a Krogan and a Korgi Rex. Fucking laugh. Okay.
that got eaten by Discord, okay. So yeah. I appreciate it.
All right, okay.
Yeah, I've worked.
I need to learn to stand up for myself.
I will end this podcast.
Continue, David. I apologize.
So I like, there's also just a number of kind of silly side quests. So I just got one where you happen upon this, you know, Korgi, like weightlifting gym. And okay, the huge, like, muscle-bound owner is just complaining that, you know, kids these days don't want to work for their muscles. They just want a, you know, shortcut. So he sends you out to buy some, you know, steroids to distribute.
Okay.
And it's just, I don't know, just this silly adventure, you know, going to fighting across the, you know, Arcology so that some bros can get swole.
Okay.
And when you come back, there's kind of the gym does a fade to black, and when it comes back, like, it's full of just like ludicrously muscled out Korgi guys.
Yeah, do they think they've gone full Gears of War?
Yeah, exactly. So however, I'm now on the next quest to, apparently, I unfortunately or fortunately got quote unquote the good stuff, which when they gave it to the little Stitch aliens just made their hearts explode. And okay, so now I'm on a mission to explicitly get low grade crappy steroids so they have something to give to the Stitches. So it's, you know, it's consistently, you know, kind of the crap sack cyberpunk thing. However, sometimes more serious and sometimes more silly.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, what kind of RPG stuff are you doing in this? Is this like Diablo where you've got a class and, like, a bunch of skill and tech trees? Is it kind of...
So,
oh, go ahead.
Basically, just the skills. You know, there's only one class. Like Diablo, you have a selection of skills that you can put points in from, you know, 1 to 20.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of the, one of the new things here, though, is you also have a up to 2 cybernetics you can equip. So right now I'm running with something that's basically disperses a nanite field so that when I kill enemies, they explode and do damage to people around them.
Okay.
And then one that's just kind of like a hydraulic super punch.
Okay.
But the interesting thing here is that each of the skills is oriented with, associated with one of 4 different types of cybernetics. And so they basically, as you build those skill points out, they also make your actual special abilities more powerful.
Mm-hmm.
The other kind of fun thing is as you, the more skill points you have, the more visibly augmented your character is.
Okay.
Which is kind of cool. So like the more, basically the more like patches of your face that are covered with like metal plates and, you know, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of cool. There's also, you know, a bunch of different types of guns. And then you can get like tactical abilities like grenades and drones, things like that. The other thing that's kind of a less usual situation is there will commonly be civilians in the areas you're fighting in. So they'll be, you know, just running around panicking.
Mm-hmm.
And there is absolutely no consequences whatsoever for like either purposely shooting them or just having them be collateral damage.
Okay.
Oh no.
Which very much fits with kind of the cyberpunk, you know, setting.
Yeah.
The one area where that gets a little weird is anything that isn't. Basically, anything that isn't coded as a hostile is coded as a civilian. So that means that you can just like walk up to like this heavily guarded, CorpSec checkpoint and shoot someone, and all these dudes that with tons of cybernetics and guns will just run around screaming like they're completely defenseless. So that's there's definitely some jank in the game, although mostly it's pretty solid.
Yeah.
So is part of the sci-fi universe like having the cyberpunk universe having like really bad AI then?
depends on the universe. Like I know in Neuromancer a lot of the AI is straight up super intelligent, but I think in some of the others less so. But in this, you actually, each person has a AI called an imp.
Okay.
And we'll give some commentary, which I think my favorite is when I entered one of the kind of slum districts, your imp informs you that this is a common place for entrepreneurs to solicit non-consensual investment.
That's don't care for that one bit.
Yeah, so it's like that is my new favorite euphemism for mugging.
So
a lot of the AI in this, yes, is definitely not so good. I just got to a prison district where the AI apparently decided to team up with the prisoners. So yeah, it's definitely, there's definitely some bugs.
Nice. Are you playing this?
That's about all I've got.
Nice. Are you playing that primarily on your own, or are you doing any co-op?
Just been doing it on my own. Just kind of because I'm probably going to try to get some co-op together with it now that I'm more comfortable with it.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Nice.
How much is the game?
Free if you have Game Pass. I have no idea how much is if you actually buy it.
Yeah, it's $30 standalone.
Okay.
Yeah. Nice. And that's made by I thought it was made by an established team. Never mind.
I think they're called like Neon Giant.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like I see more and more of these darling games that are just made by fresh teams.
Yeah, yeah. And more often than not, they're people who have left other established places.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. So yeah, Atomic Crops and The Ascent. I'll do mine, because it'll be pretty quick, because one of them is story-based, and there's not an awful lot to say about it, that, you know, without spoiling things, and the other is a demo that I mostly play for comedy value. I'll do the serious one first. I want to talk about Strangeland. This is a point-and-click adventure game. If you are doing a search for it, it will be complicated. There's a movie called Strangeland. But yeah, this is made by Wormwood Studios. They're the team who made a game called Primordia, which for whatever reason I didn't pay attention to, like without it actually even like taking a look at it to learn that, oh, this might actually be entirely my kind of stuff. So I'm going to be playing Primordia based on the fact that Strangeland is really, really good. So this is a point and click adventure game. You're playing as an unnamed person who wakes up in like a really twisted kind of like other world outside of this carnival, the center of which is a woman who you don't know, but get the feeling that she is important to you in your amnesia, and you are constantly watching her jump to her death in a well.
Good.
Yeah, everything is real, like twisted and metaphorical in a Silent Hill kind of way. I stream this on Hexcrank Live, so it's a horror game. Everything is real twisted, super gory, super gross. A lot of stuff like based on mythology, but like they base a lot of it around like really heavy wordplay. This team had really was really inspired by older point and click adventure games, things like I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream, things like Darkseed, Sanitarium, things like that. So kind of informed by that particular stripe of horror adventure games. And yeah, like there's not an awful lot I can say without like revealing the story, but it's super good, primarily because, you know, it's unclear if this is an afterlife or it's all in your head or things like that, but you're trapped here. There's no way to get out, including through death. So things that would cause your character to die, they do cause your character to die, but you just kind of like respawn back outside the carnival, and you have to walk back in. Like you can use that to solve puzzles. So, you know, like one of these is you need to get a hold of some acid, but the only way to get acid in the world is there's this Lovecraftian starfish monster that's being held in like a freak show kind of place. It's like in a tent.
Of course there is.
Yeah. And you have to piss it off enough to make it spray you with acid, and it'll dissolve you. And then you have to go back. After you've respawned, and then gather up whatever acid remains on the floor into a little bottle that you have, stuff like that. And that is always cool to me. I don't know. It's a fun little trope where death can be used to move forward. I like it in Planescape. I like it in the Wario Land games, and I like it here. The art style is fantastic, super detailed, super gross. There are some things that were like, is this within the Twitch terms of service, actually?
Oh, no.
Because, you know, the stuff that they're pulling from is inspired a little bit by like H.R. Giger, where there's body horror, but it's also like, you know, kind of sexual a little bit. In a really off-putting, like, and this is in no way meant to titillate. This is supposed to make you uncomfortable kind of way. So be prepared for that. If you're going to go into it, be prepared for, you know, all kinds of, psychological horror trip kind of things. But
you have to like list all those things when you're twitching?
List all
like warnings and stuff.
Oh, it's nice to do if you're aware that it's coming up. You know, I don't know that you have to. If I'm playing a game where I know that there's going to be something kind of Uki coming up, or just like I can tell, like the upcoming thing, like, yes, I'm going to walk in on this and it's going to be a bad time. I generally tell the like warn people saying like, hey, this is probably going to be coming up, so you're aware, but like, it's not something the platform demands. I just think it's a nice thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but sometimes you're flying blind and you're caught off guard by your extremely well put together adventure game. Yeah, that's Strangeland. Do you guys have any questions about that? It's hard to think of too many things to say that don't that don't spoil it. As far as the play goes, it's like really classic. You're picking up inventory stuff and combining it and talking to people and using items to move forward.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
And no other questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Get your gag game already.
Get to the gag game already. Yeah. So during a daytime stream last week, I streamed and Jala tuned in and she called it a new low. Which was fun.
You're the best of the worst.
I streamed Lawnmower Simulator, or the demo for Lawnmower Simulator.
Oh, no. Wow, you have now reached peak, like, dad.
Yeah, just in case Power Wash Simulator wasn't enough proof of that. That's probably as far as I'll go in that direction. Maybe. I make no promises. I will definitely embarrass myself further. It's a game. It's a British game, and you are, you know, going, or you are mowing lawns and gardens in Britain, but like, you are starting a fledgling lawn mowing lawn care business, and the demo walks you through picking out one of two mowers that's available to you in it. You can do like little test drives. And then I did one. I could only stream for an hour, so I only did one mowing job. But yeah, you take on these jobs, mowing these lawns. They have certain criteria. They say, hey, it needs to be mowed to this length. You need to mow like this much of the lawn in order to get the money for it. And like,
it is less than all of it.
I think it is. I don't know. And so like the goal for mine that I got was like 99%. Like 90, uh-huh. They led me to believe, the interface led me to believe that there would be times where it would be less than that. But I don't know if that's like, okay, you need to mow this part of it, but not this other part of it, or you can just like sign your name into it and then peace out. You don't want to do that because you won't get paid, and you'll also like get a reputational hit. Like,
you kind of want to do that.
Yeah. Well, when I was test driving the mowers, I did mow my name into the grass in cursive. Okay, I'm not made of stone.
Like, one of my favorite childhood memories is my dad mowed a baseball diamond for us.
Ooh,
backyard. Yeah, nice. That was badass.
Yeah. So like the overall game, like, you are expanding your business. You can like hire people and buy and maintain more stuff. The demo is literally, I mowed like a lawn. It was a very English, you know, English garden back lawn with lots of,
I mean, if it's English, wouldn't it be a garden?
Yeah. I mean, very much so. Like, there were, you know, lots of planters and trees and stuff like that. Looked pretty nice, but like, yeah, you're mowing a lawn. It's pretty basic. Like, I don't know. I start by going around the edges twice and then going back and forth. It's just kind of just like mowing a lawn. You have a little like detective vision where you can highlight all of the uncut grass. you need to set your mower deck height for the cut height, and also like check and make sure that you're not overloading your motor by going too fast. Trying to mow too much grass at once, like that kind of thing. If you do overload the mower, it'll leave like piles of grass on the lawn, which you'll get fined for. Like, you get fined if you like run into the flower beds and stuff like that. But before it's so funny because it's timed, but before you mow, like you have to go and like check the lawn for stuff that needs to be removed. So like I went and got like, you picked up a bunch of dog poop that was on there, moved a garden gnome. There was just a set of bolt cutters that was out in the lawn.
So this was a hitman lawn.
No, my joke was that this crossed over with Thief Simulator. but yeah, like it's like, all right, you have 4 minutes to go and check the lawn, you know, make sure, you know, because you don't want to run over something because it'll nick your blade and you have to pay money to repair it.
Yeah, those walkthroughs are important.
Yeah, no, for sure. So it was really fun to stream it because it's ridiculous, but like, I'm probably not going to buy and play the full version because there are, you know, if I'm looking for something like that, you know, with an economic sim to it, like House Flipper is going to be the one to go. If I'm looking for like the compulsive, like I am taking my character and, you know, literally touching every single like square inch of this 3D model, be it a, you know, be it a lawn or an object, like Power Washer Simulator, like it does a real good job of scratching that itch. I think it's just real, it's a real novelty. And like, I don't know, like it doesn't cost anything to try the demo. Try it. You might like it. As I like to say, it's not boring. It's relaxing.
So what?
I was relaxed watching it.
this is where I'm going to, join a GTA server and start a lawn care empire.
Yep. Oh man, yeah, I gotta make some green by cutting green. Yeah.
So what would infuriate you more, a stripe of dirt left over after power washing or a stripe of grass left over after mowing,
in real life or in the game?
Let's do both.
Well, I mean, in both, it would be the grass.
Okay, fair enough.
Like I've had that happen when I'm mowing my actual lawn, where like I just I'll get the lawnmower put away, and then like as I'm walking back, I'll realize, ah shit, like I'd missed this. I missed this little part of it. Like I just didn't, I didn't do the overlap quite right, and I was like, go back and pull the damn thing back out, and yeah.
You just need to have a green wall, and then you can have both at the same time.
Yeah. Whereas with power washer, like it would be annoying if you put it away, but also it's like less likely to happen. And in the game, you know, Power Wash Simulator is just more fun than Lawnmower Simulator because it's designed to be more fun than Lawnmower Simulator. Yeah. Nice. Ben, you watch it. Do you have any questions?
It looked cool. I could see once the novelty of it wears off that it maybe is not as fun.
Probably doesn't have legs. Yeah.
Yeah. Chopped off by the lawnmower.
Oh, man. And that's all I got. Strangeland and Lawn Mowing Simulator.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So this is only tangentially related to this being a British game, but have you seen the news story about apparently kids being locked inside during COVID just watching nothing but Peppa Pig and developing British accents?
I've not seen that specifically about this. I have heard, like, anecdotally, I've heard stories of people, people whose kids start speaking in British accents when they talk about Minecraft.
Like, that's hilarious.
Just like, oh, we're going to, like, either when playing Minecraft or talking about it, or just like doing like make believe, you know, like as Minecraft commentators, because all of the you know, the most popular Let's Players of Minecraft are British. It, like that, they just kind of slip into that mode. So I'm not surprised that all these kids whose only socialization is Peppa Pig slip into it.
Yeah. Also, Peppa Pig is a little brat. Watch something a little more emulatable.
Yeah, like Caillou.
God, no. Okay. we can't release this. Someone might take you seriously.
Oh, man. I've never seen a single frame of Caillou or whatever, but I just know it makes parents so angry, and it's fun. Oh. It's fun to provoke them.
Huh. It is what a patron. I gotta get the like Inception levels of what this is. It is a patronizing kid emulating what a parent patronizing them sounds like. Oof. For an entire episode. Yeesh. Like everyone talks that way.
Kaiju? So is it like a Godzilla?
No. Mashup.
Caillou, like a French name. Yeah. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I've got two new games. And I was going to say two recent games. I will say two recently popular games instead.
Okay.
So I'm going to start with the MMO tip. I have picked up Final Fantasy 14.
Oh, dang. Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah, just I haven't played an MMO since the City of Heroes.
Oh yeah, when the guild turned into a sexy, yeah. Like a horny guild, horny roleplay, yeah.
Yeah, so I'd kind of left with a bad taste in my mouth, and that wasn't just the buckets of, I'm not going to go
hopefully
there.
Hopefully not literally. Yeah.
right.
But anyway, so I just hadn't really thought about MMOs much since then, and saw all this talk about, even before the scandals, like, man, people are really flocking away from WoW and towards Final Fantasy. So I went and saw what that's all about, and as has become the meme, it's free for a good long time. Mm-hmm. So relatively low investment. And several, as I was reading up and talking about maybe checking it out, several people warned me, like, hey, just like, the first 30 or 40 levels, it's pretty simplistic, like it's slow moving, like it's not really complex, so just be aware of that, don't let that turn you off. And I'm like, no, that's what I'm here for. I need something easy. Mm-hmm. Like I need a nice space out and put on a podcast game, and that is exactly the space that Final Fantasy has filled so far. I'm playing as an archer, and I guess the way that the game works, and this is, I'll butcher it because I haven't gotten there yet, but there's a set of classes that are available to you at first, jobs, and then once you get those to a certain level, you can start taking additional specialized jobs on top of those. Yeah. So I'm working my way to be a bard, but that means you start out as an archer.
Yeah.
Makes you basically sense. Hit the shoot thing button. I didn't follow that either, but I wasn't going to question it.
But both bards and archers make their living manipulating something that has a string. Okay.
Oh, that's good. I was going to say they both aim for your heart.
Ooh.
They're both spoony.
perhaps
a bit more of a reach, but go ahead.
So basically, it's you stand back and shoot thing, and if there's one thing, you push one button. And if there is more than one thing, you push another button. Mm-hmm. And that's it. That's what you do for 40 levels. And I freaking love it. Like,
nice.
It is very zen, and just a friendly experience.
Cool.
That's not to say it's without challenge. I have died. I think I'm closing in on level 30. I'm not quite there yet. I've died twice so far. Mm-hmm. One time I accidentally targeted an additional enemy and pulled more than I could handle. And then the second time was versus a boss that you needed to kind of kill something they spawned before it, basically a bomb before it blew up. Mm-hmm. And we didn't quite get there. So, you can't completely check out. It's not without its dangers. But it is really cool to kind of inhabit that MMO world again. And get those sweet XP rewards, etc. Just in a very low stakes environment.
Hmm. Nice. Are you playing this on PlayStation or on PC?
Yeah, I'm playing on PS4.
Okay. Yeah.
And I've been very pleasantly surprised at how well it translates. Mm-hmm. It's the MMO format that you expect. Like, there's menus and bars and cooldowns everywhere, but they do a really, really good job of managing it. Basically, mm-hmm. holding L2 or R2 brings up a hotbar, and then any one of the D-pad or shape buttons is an item on that hotbar. So you've got two layers of hotbars, a button press away, and then you can press another button to kind of cycle through hotbars as you start getting more abilities. Mm-hmm. And I'm, that's what 16 different abilities that are at your fingertips at any given time without needing to switch hotbars. And that's, given the simplicity of the game, more than enough to keep you going.
Yeah. Now I was I was surprised. So I picked this up last summer when it was on sale, and I did like the tutorial stuff, or you know, like just I never really even left like my character's starting area. I never talked about it because I didn't do enough to feel like I had enough to say. But I was impressed. Again, the last MMO that I played was WoW. You know, back when I was in college, and not even that much then. It doesn't take that much to impress me, for a modern, MMO that is, you know, as long as you've ironed out more than WoW circa 2008, we're probably going to be good.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, when this game launched, I understand it didn't have it ironed out. Like, this game was terrible when it launched.
No, like famously bad launch, like so bad that they like basically took it back into development.
Yeah, like let's hit the reset button on that. And they very successfully did. So I'll keep on using that as my I don't have enough energy to do anything intensive game. But I've really enjoyed my time in Eorzea, I think is the name.
Maybe of the world. I think so. I've only ever read it. I've not actually tried to pronounce it.
Yeah, it's a lot of vowels. Which, you know, that's Final Fantasy for you.
Oh, it's any fantasy.
Nice. So that's Final Fantasy 14. And then the other game I've been playing is Splitgate, which I mentioned last week.
Yeah, this is the multiplayer shooter that has portal stuff happening, right?
Yep, Halo with portals. And before I talk about the game, I want to talk about the experience of getting into the game.
Okay.
And actually this applies to both games. I had what I'm going to dub the Thursday of frustration. Cause I had decided on, I guess I was in a new game kind of mood, on Thursday I downloaded Final Fantasy and I downloaded Splitgate. Final Fantasy, I loaded in, I picked the server that I knew some friends were on, and you know, it's gotten massively popular. So I knew the server was full, got all the way through character creation, which, because I agonize over everything, was like a half hour process, and then got the message at the end of it that because the server was full, I couldn't create a new character.
Oh God. Well, did it let you save the design?
Not in any way that I could see.
Oh God.
And again, you could have told me that at the start. So I literally just had to leave the game up on that screen and try it again in the morning. And thankfully that was like a lower traffic time, and I got in.
Yeah.
But it's a small miracle, because every time I've played since, there has been some kind of queue.
Right.
It's not usually longer than a minute, but there are generally 20 to 50 people in line to get onto this main server ahead of me, regardless of when I join. Like, night, day, early, late. It's popular.
It's so, like, I feel embarrassed at how angry I get when there is any scarcity at all.
Like, there's the internet, there's everything of everything.
Yeah, or but just like, I don't know, thinking about just like with supply lines being as like weird as they are, for all of for all of my adult life, everything has always been in stock. You know. And like, oh, an MMO, why don't they just put more servers on? Like, it's popular, they can just put more servers on. But like, no, scarcity is so new to me, and that is such a shitty attitude for me to have. But also, just give it. No. Yeah.
I don't wait for shit. So I was, when I realized I wasn't getting into Final Fantasy 14, I was like, all right, you know what? No, great. This is fine. I'm okay. I also downloaded Splitgate. I'm going to go play that. And if you remember, what brought Splitgate to my attention was the fact that they had such a huge influx of players that they needed to go down, go offline to completely like reset their server architecture. I think I remember from that article that they were set up for like 65,000 concurrent players, and they were regularly getting 2 million.
Jesus.
So so I booted up Splitgate, and it happened to be the day that the servers were down.
Yeah. So did you have to like go read a book or call a loved one? Like,
Disgusting.
Sucked. I absolutely sucked. So, you know, even when I came back around to Splitgate when the servers came up, and every time I've joined, there is like a 45-minute wait to get into the game. Now, I want to draw a distinction. This is to get into the game, not into a game. Oh. So once you're loaded in and you actually like click the play button, you join something almost instantly. But the wait to just get onto, you know, the server, I guess, whatever version of it they have right now, you have to launch the game and then go do something else for 45 minutes and just kind of check back periodically to see when you get loaded in.
Hmm. Yeah. Do you get kicked if you're like idle, if you miss your window of joining the game?
Thankfully not. Okay. So that is very nice. Although they have put on the Discord like, hey guys, don't just sit AFK. Like other people want to play. Yeah. And we're working on making it better. So I think they initially had a very small set of servers up and they're progressively expanding it. But the wait times have still been really long to get to the main menu. Once you get in though, or once you queue up, it is very quick. And guys, this game is worth the wait. It is worth every second. The wait could be twice as long.
Okay.
And I would still be recommending this game because it is phenomenal. You know, the Halo with Portals premise should be enough to sell you on it. Like, I really don't need to say much more than that to tell you why. But everything just feels so right and works so buttery smooth. Yeah, kudos to them. I've never had an instance of like lag or feeling like stuff wasn't synced once I'm on. Mm-hmm. So this kind of very measured approach they're taking to expanding the servers is working for them. And playing with Portals just feels so freaking good.
Yeah. So
is there fall damage?
No fall damage.
Oh, that's too bad.
So the worry from last week when we were just kind of talking about the game in the hypothetical was that the game would be overwhelming or confusing with lots of portals going around, because like you wouldn't be able to discern, you know, who was coming from where. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. is that the case?
There is some disorientation, but they do a lot of really smart things to manage it. So first off, you can go through any portal, but you can only see through your portal.
Okay.
Any other portal, friendly or enemy, is kind of blurred out and is just a pattern. So you're going through blind. Now, if you're, you know, coordinating with teammates, I imagine at higher level play, you can know where your teammates' portals are going. Or, you know, a lot of times as you learn the map, you can kind of guess like, oh, it's the start of a round and a portal popped up there. That means someone is coming through from their spawn. Mm-hmm. So you can have an idea. But the only thing you can actually see through is your portal.
Go ahead. So you can get shot and like not have any visibility in who's shooting you or from where?
Yes, you can shoot people through a portal whether or not you can see through it, mm-hmm. which means you can also get shot through a portal whether or not you can see through it.
Yeah.
And honestly, that is, as you're kind of learning and ramping up your understanding, as you're learning to frag with portals, that's the first use of it, is it is a flank window. Like, mm-hmm. forget about going through it. You can just open a window on the other side of the map, look through it, and shoot at people from another angle. Mm-hmm. And the maps are designed incredibly well in that there's always places to do that, but there's no places that feel like they are completely safe or overpowered to open up a portal. In addition to that, the grenades in this game don't do any damage to players. Instead, they take out portals. So if you see a portal somewhere you don't like, if you want to stop an enemy from escaping, just throw a grenade at their portal. And it's got a pretty wide radius. It'll delete portals. So if you're defending a point that you know someone's trying to get onto, you can kind of like watch for where you think the portal is going and try to shut them down before they can even get through it. Which is very interesting and frantic, right? There are some maps where the flag or the area you're defending will be on one level. But the ingress is above or below, and you can kind of see to the level to launch a portal, but then you have to go through the portal to get it, get there. And so if you're on that point, you're kind of swinging wildly looking for, all right, where are you? Like, I hear someone below me, where are they putting the portal, where are they putting the portal? And again, it's not hard to hit with a grenade once you see it, but it's a very interesting play, counterplay aspect to the game. Mm-hmm. So you can only see through yours. Yours are very differently colored from friendly. Like, enemies are red, friends are blue, yours are yellow and purple. So that's very manageable. And you kind of opening those flank windows is a great way, especially if you're in a beginner pool, to kind of start getting a feel for the game. I will say I consistently forget which portal I put where. So I'll like put a portal high up and I'll be, you know, in a fight and be like, oh, I need to get above them. So I'm going to go to that high up portal and then make a new portal with the portal that was high up, thereby completely defeating my intent. That's frustrating. And I don't really know how they could, you know, how they could bubble wrap that.
Right.
But that's the most frustrating thing I've had is just remembering where did I put the portal. And especially when deciding, like, do I want to go to A or B? Mm-hmm. One, where is A or B? And then two, which button is A or B?
Yeah.
And that can get hectic.
That's
when the button be A or B?
I wish, yeah. Q and E does not map easily.
No, yeah, that's tough. I mean, Portal solves the, like, where is the portal problem by just making it so that you can see the ring of your portal. Even if like geometry is between you and it, you know, mm-hmm, so like it's like an AR overlay almost to, you know, just let you know at a glance. But I don't know if that would like break the tactics or what have you, like if that would make a big difference if it was just your portal.
Yeah, this one gives a little icon above them and it's a colored icon so you can tell theoretically which one it is. Again, if I couldn't tell you right now if you put a gun to my head if Q was the yellow portal or the purple one. I don't know. So they've got some element of that. The other thing that gets a bit weird is when you're looking through a portal, you know, you can see like silhouettes of your teammates running around the map. And you also see icons pointing you to like, here's point A, here's point B. Mm-hmm. Those are always related to where you are right now versus what is through the portal.
Yeah.
And it's very easy to forget that in the moment, especially if you're using the portal like a window and kind of staring and shooting through it. And it's like, okay, cleared everyone out. Time to go to point A, jump. Oh, wait, A is actually behind me. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. It instantly changes when you go through the portal, and it's easy to forget that. So there's a couple ways that you can get yourself confused with a mechanic like this. I mean, they were never going to escape that. But by and large, it's just so incredibly successful how good it feels to use portals in an actual FPS.
Nice.
The weapons are pretty faithful to Halo. Like down to, you got your battle rifle, you've got your sniper rifle, you got the rail gun. It's like there's people who've played Halo will recognize these weapons instantly. There's the pistol. There's no sword equivalent. Instead, you have the BFB, which is a baseball bat. That's a one hit kill.
Yeah.
So that's fun to play.
That sounds like a sword equivalent to me. The energy swords were one hit kill anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't get the lunge though. That's what I'm missing. I want that lunge.
Yeah. this is the real test. Do they have a needler equivalent?
No, that is missing. I'd forgotten all about the needler.
Yeah. Because nobody likes that weapon but me.
Hands down, the best gun, except for the pistol.
Well, I mean,
the weapons are familiar, and that's a good thing. What I really enjoyed, and what I think is only possible because the game has been so immensely popular, is the incredible variety of game modes that are available from the start.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a little bit of drip feeding, and like you've got probably 10 available to you right when you start the game, and then they'll, you know, when you reach level 10, it adds 5 more, and then when you unlock ranked, that adds a bunch more, and et cetera, et cetera. But there's everything from straight up team deathmatch to domination, which is like capture the point, king of the hill modes, gun game modes, SWAT. I actually really enjoyed, which is basically
SWAT.
Team deathmatch, but headshots are one hit kills. it's good stuff. I think playing on a mouse and keyboard has changed my opinions of games like that. Whereas before on consoles, I hated anything that required precision. There's like, you know, no respawn modes. There's respawns, but the timer goes up every time you die modes. There's oddball where you got to pick up basically a disco ball and then beat people to death with it. You score points while you're holding it. Like everything you can think of. The one thing I haven't seen actually is a zombies mode, which was my favorite thing to do in Halo. Kind of manually start everyone on one team except for one. And then when you die, you switch over. But, you know, you get to see all this different stuff have all these cool, unique takes on a really solid core game purely because mm-hmm. there's no one queue that's empty. Yeah.
What is
because there's just so many people playing.
What is the maximum number of players?
That's really well done. 4-on-4.
Ah, that sucks.
Would you want it higher or lower?
Oh, much, much higher.
Interesting. I could see that getting a little crazy.
I'm in camp, like, first-person shooter doesn't become worth playing unless it's at least 8 versus 8.
Mm.
Oh, man. Yeah, that would be a level of chaos that I don't know that I could comprehend. And I also, to how hard it is to program something like this, I don't know if that many portals would start to make your rig smoke or not.
Yeah, I was thinking about that when you were talking about the rules, where it's like, I think the reason why you can't see into other portals is just for performance.
You can't render all that, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yes and no. Like, absolutely, that is a reason to do it. And if they decided they wanted it all to be see-through, they might not be able to. Because of technical issues, but the play of not being able to see through some portals and deciding like either I'm going to shoot through it anyway, try to hit someone who just opened it up, or like okay, this guy jumped through, do I follow him? It's just really, really interesting situations that it creates. So it is not at all a detriment to have that accommodation for the technical side.
Mm-hmm.
I think they should just make it so that, you know, PC players with decent rigs can see through portals and console players can't.
just make it overt how much we hate console players.
I mean, the rest of American society favors the rich, so why not here too? Right?
It's just realistic. It's preparing you to get out there in the market. Yeah.
Hey, teaching kids important life lessons.
With shotguns.
Yep.
But a great feeling shotgun in the game. Really had fun. I think it was like an 18 kill streak with a shotgun and just a team that did not understand that you probably shouldn't just keep on running up the same ramp towards me.
You do the flip cock like in Terminator.
Yes.
Do you?
No, nothing so cool. Nothing so cool, unfortunately. It'll be interesting. The monetization on this, I'm not sure I get. Like they've got the whole battle pass thing, but you get that for free right now, which I'm assuming is a beta thing. I don't know. There's weapon skins and emotes and all that stuff. It feels like they're doing a pretty straight up Fortnite clone, would be my guess. You know, there's a rotating store and it's all your bog standard stuff, which is, you know, that in my mind, it is the best version of free-to-play that we've seen.
Yeah.
For a game that is at scale like this. So, I get it. It's also like a team of 6 people, and how much do I want them focused on making a great game versus making the next skin? I don't know. So
Yeah. I can't imagine they're going to stay a small team for long.
No, they got $10 million for servers alone. Like, this is going to balloon real quick.
Yeah.
So, I would have loved to see something, maybe a more creative business model or something that was willing to ask the price that I think this game is worth.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to do what you got to do to keep the lights on. So I won't begrudge it that. And it's free right now for the price of 45 minutes waiting for the game to let you in.
Yeah, that's the run.
But if you can afford to turn this on and walk away from your computer for 45 minutes, it is 110% worth playing.
Hmm.
Yeah, so that is Splitgate.
Splitgate. Final Fantasy 14 and Splitgate. Both games you're unlikely to be able to play right now. Oh, man. Nice. Ben, how about you?
I also got 2 games this week. They're both new ones, but they're both pretty small. So the first one I'll talk about, I only played the demo of, but it's, Cole, this might be in your wheelhouse. It's called Buddy Simulator 1984.
Oh, dang, yeah. I saw this was on sale. I need to see if it's still there. Buddy Simulator 1984. This is a horror game, right?
Yeah. So I was looking for simulator games, and this came up as being a well-reviewed one. But basically, it's kind of evokes the same feeling as HAL in 2001: A Space Odyssey. And then it's kind of in the same vein as that one game where you're playing in a haunted video game cabinet.
Pony Island, yeah. Where you're tortured by the devil.
Yeah, so it's similar to that, but just like a much slower burn. So I've only played for about 30 minutes to an hour or so. And it's the demo, but it opens up. You have like a console terminal that you're typing commands in, and you're talking to this program that's on your computer. In fact, like you open up, it's like you choose like what ROMs to play on your computer, and there's only one, and it's Buddy Simulator 1984, which is an AI that will play games with you, and it gets better as it learns from you, like how to do things. And so it's a pretty short list of games from the start. There's things like Hangman, things like Rock, Paper, Scissors, stuff like that. Mostly you're playing those to advance like the story, which is the computer talking to you. Kind of from the get-go, the computer has a very like, kind of like one of those awkward people who are like more your friend than you are their friend. Or reverse, you know, it's like where it's like one of those things where it's like they say their sentence and then there's awkward silence, but they don't feel like there's an awkward silence sort of thing, you know? And it's like, wow, we're best friends. Like, thanks so much for hanging out with me, doing this or whatever, you know, that sort of thing. Anyway, so like that part all feels like pretty weird. And then like things start to sort of ramp up in creepiness where it's like after the first three games that you play with them, he's like, oh, hey, you know, there's no more games. I don't want you to be bored or anything. Why don't you just grant me like system admin privileges? Can you type in this command to the computer? And like, so it starts like very like innocently like that. And so it's like, okay, I'll do this and reboot. And it's like, okay, now we're going to play a much more involved game. It's going to be like a text adventure game where you're typing in full commands. But now it's like much more obsessed about you. It's like, where it's like these details that you've told the program, like your favorite color or things like that, start coming up in this world that you're playing in. And it's just getting like slowly more and more unsettling as you play it. So I'm not too deep into it, but it's been pretty good so far. Pretty well executed, pretty good writing, good pacing as far as like ramping up the creepiness. I thought it would be good. I thought it would be a good recommended Friday morning game because it's both like horror, but it's also a simulator game. So it matches like it'd the two axes of the games you've been playing.
It won't be as jarring as going from mowing a British lawn to hell like I did last week.
Fair. But yeah, that's been pretty interesting. I'll probably continue playing that throughout this week. Any questions about that?
No, I'm happy to hear that it's cool. The thing that it kind of like made me a little bit skittish about it was that it is a long game. By long game, I mean like 10 hours, for this kind of thing. So I was a little bit like, I don't know if I want to stream that, but I could also just play it for fun.
Yep.
It's a foreign idea, but I could just do that.
Speaking of games you can play for fun, the other game that I played this week is a game called Pico Park. This is a Pico, and by that I mean it's a small game. I think it's $5. It's a multiplayer only game, and it's pretty straightforward. It consists of 12 worlds, each with 4 levels, and it involves coordination with the people that you're playing with to try and get to an end objective.
Okay.
So first few levels, very straightforward platformer. The only thing that's kind of different about it is you can jump on top of one another, and you kind of have to use that to coordinate. So for example, there might be a gap in the platforms, so you have to kind of stack on top of one another and like lean over the edge so the person on top can jump over, press a button to extend the platform back so then everyone can cross. Like kind of simple puzzles like that.
Yeah.
But it immediately gets more and more interesting upon World 2 and 3 and 4. For example, the World 2 introduces a mechanic where you're all tethered together now. And so there's like physics around this where it's like, okay, if there's four of you and one falls off, it's okay. Everyone can just move in the other direction and pull them up the wall. If two fall down, you could still do it, but it's going to be really difficult. If three fall down, you're dead. Mm-hmm. And there's like really, there's really good game design around this sort of mechanic, because you can get in situations where it's like some puzzles, like you have to have somebody fall off. Sometimes you need to like jump off in certain particular ways. Sometimes you're completely screwed, so you have to like do things perfectly. It's at times it's very fun to play. At times it kind of devolves into like, I can't believe you did this sort of thing to the one person who messes up and makes everyone else have to retry the level. But then it's like, I don't know. Then there's like room for like good nature trolling where it's like, oh wow, it took us like 10 minutes to try and beat this level and we finally did. Oh, I'm just going to run off to the right and kill myself so we have to play this again just for fun. Like,
yeah, right, no. Right. I mean, yeah. Like, we did that kind of shit when we were doing It Takes Two, you know?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So, yeah, it's just a tiny game. I would say, like, the value proposition, like, it only took us 2 hours and we beat, I think, 11 of the 12 levels, the worlds. Mm-hmm. One of the worlds is offline only, so you wouldn't play that with your friends. But it plays up to 8 players, so I could see this being a whole bunch of fun if you could get up to 8 people to play it. Mm-hmm. But it took us 2 hours to beat, and it's a $5 game. So I would probably recommend like putting it on a wish list and then playing it when it drops to like $2 on sale or something like mm-hmm. that. But yeah, it was a short, fun experience.
Nice. Yeah. Like, were you playing it like just with remote play on Steam, or what was it for you?
I was just playing it on Steam. Like, yeah. Yeah, mouse and keyboard.
Cool.
Yeah, nothing too fancy. There's a little bit of lag issues. We were playing three people, kind of like one East Coast, one Mountain, one Pacific. Okay. So there's sometimes a few issues with lag, but mm-hmm. that was fine because we could kind of rearrange who was doing what to kind of make it work. It was never like a critical failure where it's like, oh, we can't beat this because there's like too much lag or something like that. So mm-hmm. that was well balanced. Yeah.
Cool. Nice.
Pico Perk.
Yeah. It sounds fun. It also sounds like a good way to make some mortal enemies.
Yeah. If we're looking for an 8 player game next Duckstream, this would be a very good candidate for that.
Nice.
So,
a lot of fun and maybe hate someone forever.
Mm-hmm. It's like Mario Kart, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it appears that we've gone through a grind without talking about SNKRX. So.
Yeah, is it out of the system, or have you guys just played it
away.
And run?
I'm not okay. sure if that's yeah. about. Yeah, I haven't played either.
Hmm? No, I haven't. Well, no, I take it back. I have played a little bit, but okay. nothing new to report.
Gotcha.
Wait, yeah. What is this?
Oh, actually, I was reading about Aiden, the developer, and he gave an interview to one of the big streamers who played the game, and the final question of the interview was, how do you pronounce SNKRX? The developer, the creator of the game, has confirmed it is Snake RX.
Okay.
Boo.
Yeah,
okay. So the mystery is solved.
I mean,
Nick Erks.
I like Snake RX because that is easier to say
than Snake Doctor.
Yeah, fewer syllables.
No, well, same.
That just can't be true.
I mean, like, well, it's pretty syllables. Similar. Yeah, and I'll stick by fewer
RX
syllables.
Is prescription, right?
Right. Yeah.
So is this snake oil?
Snake pills. Yeah. See, here's the thing. We said, oh, we went a whole ground without talking about snake RX. Then we did it, and then we talked about Snake RX.
Yeah.
If Ben hadn't missed anything, I would have legit forgot.
All right, so we've moved to meta talking about Snake RX, and soon we will not talk about Snake RX.
Fair.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you posed for the nice people, and who suggested it?
Yeah, so Case sent in this question, and it's about choice in video games. Specifically, a lot of games will be like, oh, you got to make these big, heart-wrenching decisions that are so difficult. And then they don't always deliver on that promise. So what is the biggest choice from a video game that was intended to be really difficult, but was actually really, really easy for you to make?
And I'll get us started here with Jaris, or Jaris, who says, Bioshock, rescuing or harvesting the little sisters. Maybe it was intentional for rescuing them to be so blatantly, obviously, the right thing to do. But it was presented as this big choice that I never even gave a moment's consideration to. Same.
Mm-hmm. When it's on the page that like one option is seems evil and gives you more resources and the other seems good and it's nebulous what the reward is, like, mm-hmm. it's just like no one who's designing this is going to let the reward not be good on the good side.
Because designers are cowards.
Yeah. Yep.
No, just make doing the right thing be a sacrifice. Come on. Or reward me differently.
I'm playing to be let down.
Oh, man. Convictions are costly. Anyway.
Mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, you got lawyer fees.
David, what does Greg say?
Any game where you're given the choice of playing a good or bad character. Why? Because my first time through a game, I'm always going to go down the path of light. Not only is it more true to me, but it seems in most games, the good path has better rewards, more developed missions, and more and better quests.
Hmm. True. I mean, especially true in the, the post images Fallout 3 with Megaton, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Speaking of Fallout 3, Ben, what does Corbin say?
Corbin says Fallout 4. Hi, I'm your son who's actually now a 65-year-old man who generally looks like a creepy wax figure. I know I let you out of cryogenic storage and did not help you in any way to get to find me. And in fact, since attacked you on numerous occasions, now would you like to team up with me and a lot of other science weirdos to abduct people and replace them with robots? Yeah, I mean, I had the easiest time saying yes to that as well.
Oh man, I still haven't played a lot of Fallout 4. That's weird. Need to rectify that.
It fell into this weird hole of, I feel like I meant to get around to it, and then it was Fallout 76, and that was just such a event, such a thing for so many reasons.
Yeah,
that Fallout 4 kind of disappeared from the public consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it came out at a weird time, for sure. Let's see, Dennis, what does David say?
David says, Final Fantasy Tactics, to save the Boko Chocobo at the beginning of Act 2 or not. Regardless of monsters filling up your party slots with their mystical asexual reproduction, budding, they definitely bud, mm-hmm. You gotta save the cute little birdie.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
it's like, literally, will you kill this puppy or not?
Yeah, well, you gotta save Boko. Hey, you can just fry up them eggs for breakfast. You know, to raise your troop morale, you know, but yeah, no, Boko got to stay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then rounding us out here, we have another David here. It is a three David epo, who says in Prey 2017, you have several choices throughout the game, including one where you decided, whether to try to defeat the aliens and save the research or blow up the station and wipe it all out. Given what I had seen up to that point and what I had learned about the Typhon, it was an easy choice to blow it all up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Ba-boom.
That's that was not my take on it the first time. The second time it was. Yeah. For me, the game Soma presents an awful lot of choices. An awful lot of euthanasia opportunities, let's say. where you just pull the plug on people who are suffering and they don't even like get like a third of the way through their pitch, like, oh please, I can't get them. Beep. I just sleep people. I don't even care. Yeah.
you do care. That's why you're doing it.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Like to the point where when I streamed it, people were like, Jesus, Cole. Like, look at him.
That's funny.
So were you also that Blase in Life is Strange?
No. The ending that I chose when I was naturally playing Life is Strange. But I don't want to talk about the detail because the story of that is, to my mind, still cool enough to. It's oh, you know, yeah. cool enough not to spoil. But I chose attachments over. I chose attachment over the humane. Yeah, the humane option. But yeah, I just oof, ruthless for me, and it didn't did not sweat it at all. let's see, David, how about you?
Man, I think the canonically worst choice of all time is definitely the infamous, like, I could give these people, you know, share these food with people, or I could not.
Yeah.
What is it from?
From Infamous?
Oh, I thought you were saying it was an infamous choice, not the...
No, the game Infamous.
It's both. Okay, there we go.
It's both.
Yeah, the other one that Dennis will probably remember is the more choices in, I think it was the second Army of Two game.
Mm-hmm. It's like literally
where it's like...
To war crime or not to war crime?
Well, yeah, it's literally like one of them is like you're in the middle of a... like firefight, and this there's a sniper rifle out in the middle of no man's land, and like this 6-year-old kid's like, oh yeah, I can run out there and get it for you.
Yeah.
And you have to decide whether to like let him go get shot or not. Well, similarly, there's a dude like raping a woman, and you have to decide whether to intervene or not.
Jesus.
It's like very much, it's like, yeah, there is only one right answer to all of these questions.
Yeah. Huh, man. 2010 was a weird year.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. But both of those sound like they would count. Ben, how about you?
Answer something that's in the spirit of this question, but it's slightly different. A game that promised a lot of big, meaningful choices but didn't really deliver would be, I would say, both like Heavy Rain and Detroit Becomes Human, in the sense that, like, when you play it a second time, it's pretty close to the same game as when you choose like completely opposite actions.
Mm-hmm. I'm just disappointed that Detroit Become Human was not about the city gaining sentience and like forming together into some like giant city kaiju.
Stop making spoilers. Jokes about me, guys.
it's kind of like that though.
Shit, guys, Detroit Became Human.
That's a solid tagline, actually.
And Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, the one that came to mind for me, I put the Megaton choice from Fallout 3 in the image, but I also thought of the Genophage choice from Mass Effect.
Okay.
I think it's specifically Mass Effect 2. And in general, I think that game tries really hard to make the choices interesting, but it's like the, you know, your squad mate in that game, you spend all this time kind of coming to see them as a human and nuance. And it's like, yeah, so you want to keep on repressing this entire species?
Mm-hmm.
It felt like an easy, no, let's not do that.
Yeah.
For me.
Yeah. I mean, kind of same thing with Arachni in Mass Effect 1. It's like, do you as a single person want to completely guarantee the eradication of this species? No, it's not for me. Later, y'all.
Yeah. And it's like you would have to probably traumatize me on some level to get me to the point of that choice being hard. Mm-hmm. And it's just not—that's not going to happen in a video game. Like the
well, premise, it's not going to happen in a mass market video game.
Yeah. But the premise of the choice or the idea of what the choice is aiming for, I could see being difficult. Mm-hmm. But it's just you're not going to push it there and keep the game playable.
Yeah. Yeah.
And nice. Yet we all played back opposite the line.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that was that was explicitly a horror experience.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting that it's like, yeah, when there's a good decision, a bad decision, it's like easy to, there's no thought or whatever, but the interesting times are when it's like bad decision versus bad decision, like in that one science fiction game, The Core or whatever. Man, my recall is terrible. You know what I'm talking about? End of the world, giant generator game.
Frostpunk. Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. Or like good versus good decisions, which is just like an RPG.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the your example of this being Witcher 3, where, you know, you are making morally gray choices with incomplete information. And, you know, there are enough times where what feels like the right choice comes back and bites you in the ass that you realize, you know, that the usual model of video game morality choices are incredibly artificial and myopic.
Yeah, I would love to see more games, at the very least, do justice versus mercy choices.
Oh, do like a Jade Empire kind of thing?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Huh. Well, thank you, Case, for suggesting the question. Thank you, Dennis, for posting, and thank you everybody for responding. And I like that there was just really minimal spoilers. I was worried that we would have to dance around stuff there.
Turns out choices are everywhere.
Yeah. Or at least
and easy. Most of them don't matter.
So if you'd like to participate in those, what does matter is going to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watching for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us that are exciting to us. Dennis, what's happening in the continuing saga of Blizzard?
Yeah, I feel like we can't not talk about this. And you know, as all the shit was starting to hit the fan last week, I think we ended on the note of like, I kind of hope that by the next time we talk about this, or by the time people are listening to this, we'll start seeing shoes drop on Blizzard. And in some ways, that is happening. There's been several high profile departures. Now, whether that's justice or just
rats playing in the
absconding, exactly. No. You know, your take, insert here. But one thing that is definitively a consequence is sponsors starting to drop from the Overwatch League.
Yeah.
So notably T-Mobile, who has had their name plastered all over the Overwatch League from very early on, has pulled out of both the Overwatch League and then also the Call of Duty League. And they've just kind of disappeared without comment from logos, from lists of sponsors, etc. Apparently DraftKings is also dropped out.
Wow.
At the very least,
when you're not, well, like when you are sketchy for DraftKings,
yeah. yeah. So that's there are sponsors dropping right and left for their professional organizations. In some ways, I'm sad that the biggest and best attempt at making esports mainstream is seeing people flee from it, but that pales in comparison to being happy that Blizzard is seeing consequences for their terrible, terrible culture and choices.
I feel like this is kind of hypocritical for people to say they want esports to be a real sport, but then have a problem with it horribly exploiting people.
I understand what you're saying. Also, there's a chance to do it right when you set up a new one.
No, there isn't. This is humanity.
Well, of note, and kind of the thought I'll leave you on is the DraftKings logo was just unceremoniously the players put duct tape over it. Which means if enough sponsors drop out, people will just have jerseys covered in duct tape. And I kind of want to see that.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, we can Mad Max this.
Yeah.
Just need enough sponsors to step up. And like to last week, hopefully by the time you are listening to this, there will be even more sponsors who have dropped.
Yeah. I mean, it just there's still a market for it. like that will probably pop up elsewhere. You know, I assume if they stuck around, it was because they saw a return on it. Then, you know, mm-hmm. that's just going to go elsewhere. And you know, it's an imperfect system. I would say it's an evil system, but right now, the fact that, the biggest way to get change is to make, bad behavior, not profitable.
Yeah, you know? There's always the element of, it shouldn't be an issue of profit for why these people are dropping, but, you know, make no mistake, they're not dropping because it's the morally right thing to do. They're dropping because they are afraid of getting negatively associated with these people.
Yeah, yeah, you know.
But so, at the same time, a result is a result, you know?
Yeah, it's the right thing happening for the wrong reason. What matters is, Blizzard is feeling a squeeze, hopefully, yes, to make meaningful changes, you know, not the bullshit they were doing where they're like, you know, hiring union busters and disguising it as negotiators for different stuff. Just
love. I have to love the case study and how you just can't hide crap. Like, you can't hide crap anymore, and it's ridiculous to think that they can. Mm-hmm. Is being proven out right now.
Yeah. God, I just wanted to get better. I'm tired. Mm-hmm. Just the details that you read in those reports. Just I know I didn't go read it myself, but just the stuff that was surfaced makes your blood run cold. Kind of related to that, I had one story, but then I saw another cooler thing. This is there is a bundle being sold on Itch called the Shorter Games with Worse Graphics Bundle. Okay.
Excellent.
So this goes back. There's a meme that was originally made by it was a tweet by Jordan Mallory on Twitter, and it's just this sentence: I want shorter games with worse graphics made by people who are paid more to work less, and I'm not kidding. Mm-hmm. Which I can get on board with all of those things. I think all of those things
that's a unanimously good take.
Yeah. So a bunch of developers on Twitch or on Itch got together and said, yeah, well, let's offer up a bundle to show, you know, what you can get, you know, just saying like, yes, if there is this sentiment against, you know, AAA scale games that come with, you know, that come from AAA work practices, then let's show a cool alternative. And so it's a $20 bundle that has let's see here, I mean, many games in it, I think like 20 of them or so, and like some of these here look really cool, and it goes to support developers who otherwise wouldn't have gotten an awful lot of attention. There are some things here that I would like that seem like they would be cool to stream. And in general, I like these bundles because they draw my attention to things that are happening on Itch, which is a cool platform that treats developers well and is a force for good in this world. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, just do a search: shorter games with worse graphics bundle. and you can see this there and pick it up.
Do you have a favorite name of any of the games in the bundle? I think mine is Date That Mothman.
date That Mothman is very good. I like,
I mean, Mothman does have an amazing ass.
I do like, my older sister left the computer so I got on and found myself trying to coordinate a raid in a game I don't play, MMOs.
Wait, turn that into an acronym.
Mosul took Sigo Takaria. Yeah, no.
Can't. Excellent. That's going to be my new ringtone.
Yep.
So I don't know about entertaining names, but Fostering Apocalypse looks like it will be adorable and then horribly heartbreaking.
Yeah. The Seance looks cool to me. It's like a text adventure kind of deal. Yeah. Neat stuff. And I just, I don't know. I like the, you know, the kind of stuff that you find on a Twitch. Date that Mothman. Yeah, that's good.
Definitely check out the picture I posted, the Mothman,
from Twitter. Is that a statue in Virginia, West Virginia?
Yep.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, no, he's got a real, got a dump truck ass. Yeah. Huh. Let's see here. So that's mine.
That's a good way to end the episode, yeah.
David, what iffy concepts are being explored in video games?
Sure. So there is a new game that is apparently has been announced and is going to, I believe, hit Steam. Called Heal Hitler, in which you play, you know, set in 1925, and you play Hitler's psychotherapist, who hopefully has to get to the bottom of his anger issues and, you know, childhood trauma and stuff in order to, you know, prevent World War II and the Holocaust. It claims
no pressure.
To be, yeah, it claims to be based on, you know, extensive research into Hitler's, you know, history and psychology and stuff like that, and is apparently meant to be a serious game. The person who's making it apparently, identifies as a centrist and a capitalist.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't really want an ethos behind a game like this.
Yeah, no, I would rather the work speak for itself, because, I don't know. There's nothing saying that you couldn't do this, but also it seems... I don't know. Like, you're playing it feels, yeah, iffy.
Comedians talk about this, where it's like, if you have like an edgy joke, like the punchline needs to be that much better to be worth like the risk of like saying what you're saying. And so it's like that with this game, where it's like, okay, we're not saying that you can't cover this material. It's just that if you do, it better be a really fucking good game. And like, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I think what tripped the wire for me is the person feeling obligated to be like, I'm a centrist and a capitalist in their byline there. That is a red flag if I ever saw one.
Yeah.
So,
like, again, similar... you can be a capitalist, but if you are out there defining yourself that way in a game about talking to Hitler, that does not bode well.
Yeah, so if that's your defense.
If you follow the link to the Reddit where apparently he defines himself as that, or something, I don't know, it's the link in the article, you know, that text is linked to a Reddit thread. And one of the top posts, which I've not verified, but according to this post, is that the creator posted presumably his game to r/Jordan Peterson.
Ooh.
Yeah.
By that reaction, I'm glad I don't know who that is.
Yeah, he's just kind of became. He is a Canadian.
Say no more. Fuck him.
No, he's like a psychology professor who got famous by kind of insisting that he would not use the proper pronouns for trans students. And doubling down on that, and then he is just a real, just real like right wing shithead adjacent, kind of like pop psychology. Really bad people cite him.
It's basically chicken soup for the alt-right soul.
Yeah, oh, no. Yeah. That's a good way to put it.
He's super like self-help. Like, oh, you just need to be more self-reliant and stuff like that. Also, apparently he once had, I don't know, some sort of fairly serious disease and got on a kick that he was going to fix it by having a diet consisting entirely and exclusively of meat, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's
which did not end well.
He talked about like he went on Joe Rogan and talked about like, oh, I drank a glass of apple juice and I felt like I was gonna die for a month, you know, because my body was so, you know, because meat is such a, you know, an all raw meat diet is what you need to live a healthy life. He's a train wreck. No, so the thing that he posted to the R. Jordan Peterson thing, it just like he posted just saying like, hey, I'm finishing up this project. he posted there saying, oh, I did a month of research. on Hitler so I can make my game. Yeah, fuck this clown. Yeah, no.
Wait, no, a month is 10,000 hours, right?
Yeah, I'm not even saying you have to do 10,000. Hitlerology is a thing. Like it's an area of study. I'm not saying you have to do 10,000 hours to get a good reckon on a guy, but
it's only like 720 anyway, Dennis.
yeah, no, I don't care for this one bit. So don't play Hill Hitler. Kind of sounds like it's controversy baiting a little bit to me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Ben, round us out. what board game am I gonna buy?
Yeah, it's a loose fit. This is a game that's coming out called Tetris in Ooh. Board game form. Mm. I don't know if it's good or not.
It's got a lot to prove.
Yeah, that's about so. All right, there's this kind of new phenomenon going on. So I'm going to kind of talk in a larger sense about this. So this is like a tiny game that's being released probably at like Target and most stores like that. And so there's this kind of weird thing where stores like Target are trying to publish board games kind of more frequently. Mm-hmm. So one of the games I mentioned in the pre-roll or the first roll was like the new Terraforming Mars game. And so I got this for a friend for his birthday, but I had to go to Target to get this. It was like an exclusive board game, mm-hmm. which is like a somewhat new concept. Like that typically hasn't been how board games have been released in the past.
Yeah.
And so it was like kind of an awkward experience because I went to like local game store. I was like, oh yeah, this game's out. I like wanted to try and see if you had it in stock, and like they didn't even know about it. And so and so this is like another one of those types of games, and it's there's been similar plays like this in the past too, because it's they did this with like Oregon Trail. Mm-hmm. But basically the way this game works is it's Tetris. But you have like a Connect Four like tray, and you have physical pieces that you are dropping in. Mm-hmm. And then you're trying to play like Tetris, where it's like fit all these things together and make it work. And there's like a scoring system behind it. It's supposed to be a pretty lightweight game that you can play in like 30 minutes or something like that. Mm-hmm. Weird thing, you can't move the pieces, like you can't tuck. You can't do any tucking in this game because you're just dropping them straight down.
Yeah.
But it's the same sort of mechanic where it's like random pieces will come next, mm-hmm. and then you have to decide from there.
Yeah.
It was designed by a board gamer or somebody who's like done one or two other games that seemed good. I don't have it off the top of my head.
Pac-Man the board game. Published by the people who did Pac-Man. He did. So
Sushi Go Party is the one I was thinking of. It's like a decent like party game. Okay. So maybe there's some hope there, but more just wanted to bring up the fact that there's this kind of like weird new trend where I think it's like probably someone at Target was like, oh, hey, board games are popular or like trending or whatever.
Yeah.
Let's see how we can like enter the space by making like cheap, not as like well-designed games, but maybe like look cooler. And like, you know, selling them at a reasonable price, I guess, because even like the Terraforming Mars was $40, mm-hmm. which typically board games are like maybe like 60 to 80. So that kind of brings, I'm kind of walking backwards into another point of hopefully this doesn't turn into a situation where it's like they try and gain a sort of like monopoly on this sort of thing by like undercutting with prices. But I'd be more concerned if they were doing that with like every type of board game and not just like these ones, these exclusives that they're trying to sell.
Yeah. Yeah. For lack of a better word, more casual kind of things.
Yeah. Yeah.
It sucks because you have to know this exists because on a Target white paper somewhere, there's leverage recognizable gaming IPs for exclusive, mm-hmm. you know, traffic drivers or something like it exists because of corporatese said it should.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, recognizable gaming IPs for exclusive traffic drivers is the most corporate thing I've ever heard.
Yep.
Thank you. I practice.
So one of the other board games that the person who's making Tetris designed was Gizmos. I actually have played that, and that is actually a good game.
Yeah.
Good, like, very medium-sized game, but it's, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I opened up by saying, like, oh, the next game I'm going to buy, or board game I'm going to buy, entirely because I like Tetris a lot, and this is inexpensive, and I'm just really curious mm-hmm. about how they would adapt it.
You do the side slide thing, whatever it's called.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I don't think you can do that. Tucking. Yeah.
No tucks.
Yeah. Well, I think that sounds like an episode of me. How do you all feel about buttoning it up?
Buttons.
Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in. This has been level number 380. Ridiculous. Mm-hmm. We appreciate you taking the time. Want to let people know I'm doing daytime streams now. If you're at all curious, if you're looking for like lunchtime viewing, or if you're on the East Coast, like, you know, early morning viewing, or West Coast early morning viewing, I am over there on the Duck Feed Twitch channel doing kind of random things. I think this coming week, at some point here, I want to stream the Strong Bad games, because I have a real hankering to play those Strong Bad games again after having done Sam and Max Save the World on WoF. Not just streaming on Friday and Saturday nights anymore. Otherwise, though, for this particular show, you know what you can do to help us out. Subscribe, rate, review, Patreon, all of those things. Am I forgetting anything? Is there anything big that we need to communicate to the people?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Get vaccinated.
Yeah. It's free and easy. It's free and easy. If you're in America, it's frustratingly free and easy if you're in America. I've been Cole Ross. You can follow me on Twitter at Cole Ross.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me on Instagram at Deck of Wonders.
I'm David Mysmith. You can find me being David Mysmith.
Mm-hmm.
I've been Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles. Okay, I've only got one. It's a war crime or not a war crime?
Not bad.
Dennis, how about you?
I have 5. Oh, wow.
Oh, wow. Oh,
man.
Yeah, doing it right. I have Spring Cowlers. I have Corgi versus Krogan. I have Hitman Lawn.
Okay.
And I have Detroit Became Human. My fifth is just the incredibly long acronym from that game title we talked about.
Yeah, so I'm not going to write that down. I can't do that. Ben, how about you?
I do not have anything this week.
David?
I had so many things that they rolled around to being nothing. Okay. So sorry, guys. I was just too good at having things.
Overflow.
I hit the kill screen. Yeah. The one that made me laugh and that sounded like they got the most reaction was Detroit Became Human.
Yeah, I like that one.
Any
can that be stylized as oh shit, Detroit Became Human?
Yeah, that was actually one I considered.
Yeah, I'll try it. I mean,
and
I
then just Detroit Became Human.
Yeah, for iTunes purposes, it may need to be censored, but yeah.
Put it in as an ATODY.
Yes. Okay. Cool. I will go ahead and do that.
All right.
Yeah. Well, I gotta go. I've got a couple more things to do before I hit the bed, And Greta is starting to lobby for treats. So go ahead.
I'm probably going to call it a night as well. So I'm going to turn on Splitgate so I can play it tomorrow.
So it's like thawing out a pork chop overnight.
Yeah. See you guys.
See you. Bye.
All right. See you. Have a good one. Bye.